You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Friday episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today is going to be a real in-depth Falcons preview. We're going to go into the Falcons, who they are, how they work, how they have lost five games, what's going on with these Falcons, and how the Vikings can maybe exploit it. But first, I want to shout out the sponsor of today's episode, which is Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, we've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season is going to be a lot different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Personally, I've been enjoying, you know, the sit on the couch. It's almost a more peaceful experience, kind of sitting at home and watching the Vikings instead of going out to a bar or whatever. But Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, no matter how you watch, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madefootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. And today, before we get into the nitty gritty of like analyzing the Falcons and stuff, there are a few notes that we probably have to talk about. For one, I think the big one is that the Falcons shut down practice on Thursday. So the Falcons had Marlon Davidson, their rookie defensive tackle, went on the COVID-19 list. They've actually had AJ Terrell on the COVID-19 list as well earlier in the season. That didn't turn into any kind of spread or any kind of event. He went on the COVID list. He's now off it. That was just an isolated thing. And hopefully the Davidson thing was an isolated thing as well. But it turns out that now a Falcons assistant coach is also tested positive for COVID-19. So as a precaution, they actually, according to the NFL protocols, they did not have to do this, but they did. They shut down practice. And I think it's important to mention that it was an optional thing to kind of give you a sense of how seriously the NFL thinks that they should take this like size of event where you've now had two people in the same week test positive, but not on the same day. And it doesn't look like much of an outbreak and stuff. And they expect to practice on Friday. Now, by the time you're listening to this, we probably know whether or not the Falcons practiced and what their positive situation is now, but it's going to be something to keep an eye on. Of course, if the Falcons do have an outbreak situation and they can't play the week six game against the Vikings, then there will probably be some bye week stuff. The Vikings bye week was coming up next week anyway, so it wouldn't change a ton for the Vikings, but obviously something we're going to want to keep an eye on. In other news, the Vikings Thursday injury report came out, and there were some interesting notes on it. Of course, Dalvin Cook still not practicing, Holton Hill still not practicing. Chris Boyd has been downgraded from a limited participation to a full-on DNP with a hamstring injury. That's actually like pretty concerning for him. We also have a surprise. Drew Samia with a wrist injury has appeared on the injury report. He did not participate on Thursday, and that brings up some interesting stuff, right? Also, if you were worried about Garrett Bradbury, who was limited on Wednesday, he was a full participant on Thursday. CJ Ham and Jaleel Johnson also on the injury report, but they both practiced in some capacity. So I think the big thing is the Drew Samia thing, right? Because there's been a lot of it can't get worse with Drew Samia. And you guys know how I feel about it can't get worse. I think it can always get worse, right? Put it this way. So earlier in the week, I posted a cut up of some of Drew Samia's tape from the Seahawks game. I went through all of his snaps. I picked out the ones that I thought looked embarrassingly bad. There were some that were not as good, but I picked out the ones that were embarrassingly bad. There were 13 of those snaps. You could theoretically have 20 snaps that are embarrassingly bad, right? You could theoretically have 25 snaps that are embarrassingly bad. You know, I cherry picked the worst ones, and that list just gets longer if it gets worse, and it can absolutely get longer. It was 13 of 88 snaps. There's plenty of room to get worse, right? So if you needed evidence that like it can get worse, it can always get worse. But I think there's also something to like the alternatives. You know, a lot of people have said, hey, why hasn't Ezra Cleveland gotten a chance yet? And they're actually asking Gary Kubiak in press conferences now, hey, what's up with Ezra Cleveland? You know, Drew Samia has been awful. Why hasn't he gotten a chance? And he basically says, you know, hey, you know, yeah, he's coming along fine and I'm really excited for him. And he kind of deflects the question and says, oh, I'm excited. He'll get his chance eventually, which I think is fair. There's something, you know, I mean, with rookies, especially a rookie like Ezra Cleveland, who we kind of thought wasn't going to be ready before this. I mean, I thought that I liked his chances to be ready by week one. I was obviously wrong about that. But like coming out of the draft, a lot of people were like, yeah, he's going to kind of maybe need a red shirt year. So I don't think it's particularly surprising that the Vikings just kind of want to put him on ice for the year. Even with poor play elsewhere, you still might want to just put him on ice, make sure he develops right, right? Like Drew Samia's development is probably completely shot at this point. He's probably developed bad habits now. He's oversetting a lot. He's you know, doing really poorly. And he might have now developed bad habits that now you have to break. So he might even be even more behind in his development, despite having snaps on the field. You know, a lot of times that trial by fire thing tends to backfire. And then you look at, you know, situations like the cornerbacks, they've gotten a trial by fire and they seem to be getting better every week. So it's of course a different thing, but you might not want to take that risk with Ezra Cleveland. So that I definitely understand. And I think that even gets exacerbated when you are trying to move him to a new position. He's had like 10 weeks, no real preseason, right? No preseason games, no in-game reps, nothing like that. He's at about 10 weeks to learn an entirely new position and transition to the NFL, which a lot of people thought that he was going to need some time to do anyways. So the fact that he's not ready by week six does not raise any alarm bells to me. And again, when I say not ready, I don't mean he'll go in and he'll be poor. I mean, he'll go in and he'll be more catastrophically bad than you could even imagine. When you're not ready and you don't know the calls and you start executing plays that aren't the play, you cannot run an offense that way. If one player does that out of 11, you cannot run your offense. It just will completely, it'll blow the whole thing up. It'll make everybody else's play level not matter. And I cannot overstate how bad that would be. And I also don't think I can overstate how bad Samia was, but I can pretty clearly predict that if you put in an offensive lineman who is not ready, it will be worse than Drew Samia. I can pretty safely say that. But now we might not have a choice. The other choice is, so if you put in Ezra Cleveland, I think he's mostly a left guard. He's been a left tackle, right, in all of college. So you might not want to put him at right guard. And Dakota Dozier is comfortable at right guard. So it would make more sense, I think, to put Cleveland at left guard and move Dozier over to right guard. But if you don't want to do that because you don't want to put in Cleveland before he's ready, you can put in Oli Udoh at right guard instead. Apparently he's been taking a few snaps at right guard. He's never taken right guard snaps in his life either. So I think you have the same kind of worry that is he going to be able to figure out a new position, but at least he's been in the offense and he's made the, you know, the NFL transition. And it's not like, you know, he's not nearly as green, right, as Ezra Cleveland. So that might be an option as well. We'll see what happens if Drew Samia practices on Friday or if he plays or whatever. It'll be interesting to see where they go from there. And the other thing is the Falcons have some interesting injury things going on. We talked with Aaron Freeman yesterday on Crossover Thursday, but they might not have a Julio Jones, and that's going to make a really big difference, right? They didn't have Julio Jones for the last week or two, so he might still be out. He might come back. Aaron didn't seem particularly confident either way. So I think that's just something that might be the game time decision. It's just going to be something we kind of have to watch. And they have had a lot of injuries actually all kind of throughout their unit. So we'll have to figure that kind of stuff out. But let's talk a little bit more about the Falcons. You know, yesterday I talked a lot about their off field and, you know, will they get a jolt with Dan Quinn and all that stuff. And then of course we talked to Aaron a lot about like their overall vibe, but let's be honest, the Falcons are having a rough time. And what causes that rough time, I actually kind of found it difficult to sleuth out and figure out. You know, usually when you have like a really bad unit, you can go, oh, look, this player is playing really horribly. And there are a couple of those on the Falcons, but not as many as you'd expect, considering that they are 0-5 and they're basically packing in the entire season right now. So it's an interesting thing, and it's going to take a little while to kind of sort through it all. So let's do that together. But, you know, it's a little bit of a wall we got to break through, right? This is not an obvious thing, and we have to go break through the wall. And if you have a wall that you're trying to breakthrough. Maybe Biltgo can be the thing that helps you do it. Biltgo is the healthy replacement for like an energy drink, but the energy isn't fake. It's lasting and it's natural. It comes from like B6 and B12. You get 10,000% of your daily dosage of B6 and B12. It has some B3, some honey, a little kick of caffeine, and it comes in three delicious flavors in these easy 1.5 ounce packages that you can take in your golf bag, your workout bag, your briefcase, whatever. It comes in peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Now, I'm not a huge coconut guy, but I love the peanut butter honey. It is delicious. So if you are interested in that kind of thing, you can go to builtgo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. All right. So I think the biggest like story with the Falcons is their defense, right? Their defense is abysmal. And what's crazy is they've kind of been on the opposite track as the Vikings. I think they've been about as bad as the Vikings. Like if you look at the overall PFF grades and stuff, they're kind of in the same range as the Vikings defensively. But what's kind of weird about it is that they have kind of like had the inverse where they actually maybe had their best couple of games in the beginning. And, you know, that Seattle game, that initial Seattle game, and then that Dallas game kind of came down to the wire and they've like declined since. And the last two games have been, of course, you know, the blowout that we all saw against Green Bay on prime time. And then they kind of just fell apart against the Panthers and they just seemed outmatched against the Panthers team that went into the season thinking about draft picks. If you listen to the crossover we did in the offseason with Bill Ricchetti of Locked On Panthers. So that is, I guess, a little bit more discouraging. Whereas the Vikings, you know, they kind of had their disaster games at the beginning and now they've gotten better over time, right? So, and like if you sort out the grades week by week, you see this. You know, if you look at just the first 2 weeks, the Vikings absolutely played worse than the Falcons. And if you look at the last three, the Vikings seem to be the better team. And a lot of Falcons are, yeah, if you just look at like all the players, at least defensively, who have played at least half of the defensive snaps, you know, guys who have gotten a lot of playing time, you know, the bottom five is Isaiah Oliver, Deion Jones, and like that, like these are starters on Atlanta. They have four of the bottom five. The only one actually who is graded really poorly is Yannick Ngakoue, who I think has gotten a couple of penalties. That's the only Viking, which I actually think is kind of wild because I think he's played just fine. But his poor run defense has been kind of a thing. Maybe we'll have to talk about that soon. But they have had really bad run defense. They've had really a tough time in coverage, especially with Kendall Sheffield, who's played 122 snaps, 75 coverage snaps, and he has a worse coverage grade than anybody between both of the defenses. So that's worse than Gladney, right? Worse than Dantzler, worse than all of these guys. And when you dive in the tape to see, okay, what is wrong with these players? Like Deion Jones, I thought Deion Jones was a good player, but his run defense has been really, really bad. It has been that the Falcons are processing really slow. They are being given, you know, like offenses are throwing very difficult things to process at them with deception. If you watch the Packers tape, the Packers used a ton of motion at the snap, a ton of play action, a ton of deception. And what they're doing is asking the Falcons to process stuff, especially the Falcons safeties, who are struggling a lot right now. And, you know, asking them to process stuff really quickly and kind of read, react, diagnose, figure out what's going on in the play. And they are doing that and they're figuring out what's going on in the play. But a lot of times by the time they realize what the read is supposed to be, it's way too late. And that is, I think, the biggest thing is that they're biting on too much deception and they're taking too long and playing really hesitant football. They're kind of playing scared a little bit. And we'll see if maybe the lack of Dan Quinn, maybe Raheem Morris comes in and like, you know, gives them a little bit of a different attitude towards this. You know, and again, we talked more about that yesterday to see if that will give them a jolt. But I think the Falcons are going to go into this game going, okay, we're going to see a ton of play action. And to be honest, they haven't seen a lot of play action this year. Teams haven't needed it. Like a lot of their biggest plays have, like a lot of the biggest plays that they've given up defensively have come from non-play action situations, which I kind of found surprising. Like they're just losing. That doesn't mean that they're void of deception entirely. You know, there's still deceptive route concepts, you know, deceptive pre-snap looks and stuff like that. But a lack of play action is a little bit interesting. But now, you know, if you are the Falcons, you're going into this game going, this is one of the most play action heavy teams in the league. We got to figure out how to read a play action fake. And I don't know if they can do that. And I think if you're the Vikings, I kind of don't hate the saying, you know, go in, do your thing. And as long as you don't run the most like vanilla concepts ever that have no deception in them at all, you know, throw some challenges at the Falcons. But I say throw challenges at the Falcons and trust that they're going to mess enough of them up. And you don't need to like beat them one on one. I think you can, you know, use concepts that require safeties to make really quick reads, right? You can use concepts that require linebackers to make really quick reads on who they're supposed to cover and how to pass off with zones, right? Use over routes and crossing routes that require a lot of communication and good zone pass offs and stuff like that. You know, make those utilize the mistakes that the Falcons have been making. You know, and I joked on Twitter earlier on Thursday, and I said that the plan should be do stuff and hope the Falcons mess up. And I think that that's a plan that can win you this game, at least on the defensive side of the ball. I think the Vikings can outmatch them. I mean, listen, their corners have probably been the least problematic part of their whole defense, with the exception of Grady Jarrett, who, of course, is Grady Jarrett. He'll probably wreak havoc on whoever the Vikings play at right guard and the interior line and stuff. I don't think that requires much analysis. Grady Jarrett, very scary. It's going to be a thing that he probably messes up enough plays. But Dante Fowler hasn't been much of a factor in the run at all. And their run defense has been really, really poor. And if I were worried about anything in this game, and I am kind of worried about this, it's not having Dalvin Cook to take advantage of that and having Alexander Mattison, whose vision is fine. You know, he's a fine running back, and 9 times out of 10, a fine running back is absolutely fine. But Dalvin Cook, I think, would be able to run wild on this game. And I think we might, this is going to be an interesting litmus test to see, all right, how much do we lose without Dalvin Cook? Of course, it's too late, right? They already got the contract, so it's not like this information helps them make any decisions or anything. But still, I don't know, a little interesting. But I digress. We have to see how much damage Grady Jarrett's going to do. But Dante Fowler's been terrible against the run. He's been okay against the pass. And, you know, of course, the Vikings tackles have been good to average, somewhere between good and average, which, you know, you'll take. I do think the Falcons have an advantage on the whole in the trenches. That's probably going to be true in most games. But I think, of course, you know, on the outside against the linebackers in coverage and stuff, against the safeties in coverage, I think if the Vikings can utilize enough play action to neutralize a pass rush that, I mean, this is not Aaron Donald and JJ Watt, right? Like, this is a pass rush you probably need to work a little bit to neutralize because your line sucks, but I don't think you need to work as hard as you will in other matchups. And if you can pull that off, then I think you might be able to get some really big, deep, explosive plays. But unfortunately, the same might be true on the other side of the ball. So we're going to talk about the other side of the ball in just a second, so stick around. All right, so let's move on to the offensive side of the ball. And I think the headline here, their offensive line is good, and that bodes poorly for the Vikings defense, because the Vikings defense has struggled a little bit against good offensive. Listen, the two best defensive performances, I don't think it's a coincidence that the defense has gotten better every week. Like, I don't think it just happens to be that they've like gone up against worse offenses every week. Right? Of course not, right? They went up against the Seahawks, and their best performance to date probably was against the Seahawks, even though they didn't end up being able to close it out. And the thing is, the Seahawks offensive line has been a little suspect, right? Their offensive line in Atlanta is very good. Alex Mack is very good. They've got good tackles. They had some struggles with the backup tackle when Caleb McGarry was out. Caleb McGarry seems to be kind of pulling it together this season, which is actually great. He's one of my favorite players that came out of that draft, so I'm actually really excited for him in like a neutral perspective. But obviously that kind of stinks, because now you need Ngakoue to do something. You need Odenebo to do something. And more importantly, you need the defensive tackles to do something. And now Jahlil Johnson, he's going to be playing through a back injury. So, and he didn't even practice on Wednesday. He did practice on Thursday. So now you're going to have like a half speed Jahlil Johnson. You're going to have to expect more from Ormond Watson stuff going up against a pretty good offensive line. I think it might be tough to get pressure against Matt Ryan, but the good news is Matt Ryan is the kind of quarterback that you can blitz. He's kind of always been the kind of quarterback that maybe you can like force him to scramble and do something dumb or fumble. I don't think he's quite as severe as Kirk Cousins in this regard, but he has always kind of been that kind of guy where if you blitz him, if you get pressure on him, he does not perform as well under pressure as he does when it's clean. So I think it's imperative to get pressure against Matt Ryan, and I think it's worth selling out on a blitz to do that. You know, the corners have been playing better, and I think to some degree you can trust them. If Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley are on the outside, I'm a little bit worried about that. If there's no Julio Jones, I feel a little better, but I still feel kind of worried about that. Russell Gage has played well this season. I don't know what Aaron's talking about. Just looking at his stats, looking at a little bit of his tape, I think he's had a reasonable season, and I think that on the outside, the Falcons have an advantage against these Vikings corners. But if you can blitz and, you know, get pressure on Matt Ryan and force him to do stupid stuff, then I think you can start to see the seams of this offense fall apart. Now, again, last two games, they've scored 16 points apiece. That's pretty bad. And like Green Bay's defense, Carolina's defense, you know, these aren't juggernaut units. I don't know. Green Bay's defense has been pretty good, but Carolina's defense is not the juggernaut unit it used to be. You know, they don't have the Josh Norman, Luke Kuechly like setup they had in 2015. And they were able to hold Matt Ryan and the Falcons to 16 points. They haven't had like Todd Gurley kind of figured it out last week, but they haven't had the juggernaut running game that they had with, like, you know, back in the Devonta Freeman days. This is not the Falcons that we've kind of feared in 2017 and 2018 and stuff. This is a Falcons team that has a lot of stuff to figure out. They're very poorly coached. They're very poorly prepared. I kind of think that they've like suffered, and this is more of a general note, I think that they've suffered from the same preparation problems the Vikings have had, where they look like they really, really needed a preseason. And, you know, I think that probably is part of why Dan Quinn was shown the door. But I don't know if it's gotten better. You know, with the Vikings, now they've had their preseason, and now they're kind of playing closer to what we would expect from them now that they had their four games to kind of get warmed up that they would usually get. The Falcons seem to have only gotten worse. We'll see again if the coaching change kind of stems that tide or not. The last thing that's maybe worth mentioning and talking about is I kind of think there's a lot riding on this game for Mike Zimmer. And I hate to say that. You heard it in the mailbag. Somebody asked me, what would I do? I would apply as much patience as possible. And I think unless, you know, you're sitting at 3-10 or something crazy, I don't think Mike Zimmer should be on the hot seat at all. But I think we all know that he kind of is. And if you go into that bye week, the thing about it is, and you know, I did a lot of research on coach firings for yesterday's episode and for his own coverage article about it, which is out, by the way. And so I'll link it in the show notes for you if you missed that. But it's an article about like, will the Falcons get a jolt from firing Dan Quinn? And it's like looking at previous situations and stuff. So I'll link that in the show notes for you if you're interested in that. But part of that is also looking at, wow, a lot of those guys got fired because they lost going into their bye week. If you get fired early in the season, like if you get fired before November, like a lot of the firings were November, December, you know, they were 3-12. A lot of them were, okay, you're mathematically eliminated and now we're going to do it. You know, once you're 3-8 and there's no chance you're going to come back to the division, not no realistic chance, but literally mathematically you are eliminated from playoff contention. Then that's when they go forward with it. And a lot of times that's week 15, week 16. That's a different situation. But with a lot of the like long tenured head coaches, you know, the Jeff Fishers that had taken their teams to the playoffs and stuff, you know, the Wade Phillipses and stuff, guys that had John Gruden, Jack Del Rio, guys that had kind of had some success before. What it really took was a really, really bad start and a week 6 or 7 bye. And then you sit in that bye and the owners have 2 weeks to think about how bad things have gone. And then somewhere in there, they'll fire the coach. Or sometimes they'll fire the coach the next day and they say, okay, it's the bye week. This is a good chance to get the new guy in, new coach in, and maybe we can turn the season around. And they think that they can turn the season around. Spoiler alert, that's never happened. But, you know, if you say have a Dick Jaron like the Bills had, he went 7-9 3 years in a row, and then he started off abysmally in his fourth year and he got canned. If you have a situation like that going into your bye, maybe you think, maybe I can we can turn this around. Maybe, you know, we get rid of Mike Zimmer. We promote Gary Kubiak to the interim position. Maybe we promote Andre Patterson to the interim position. Lord knows he's, you know, he's earned that kind of chance. And you can maybe say, all right, yeah, well, maybe they're 1-5, but maybe if we get a new coach in there, if we decide that we want to pin everything on Mike Zimmer and say Mike Zimmer's the problem, Mike Zimmer's the cancer, then, you know, we can turn things around. I don't think that would ever happen. I think that's absolutely hubris, but that's the way that organizations think when you have a hot seat situation. So, I mean, you tell me, if you're Ziggy Wilf and you're Mark Wilf and you just saw your team fall to 1-5 and they just gave the Falcons their first win after they just fired their coach and you're sitting there going into the bye and it's the perfect opportunity to make a switch and try to turn the season around, you have to think that they would be considering it. I don't think they should. I would disagree with it if they pulled that trigger. I think the excuses this season are more valid than they've ever been with COVID and all that stuff. And even if it's not a valid excuse, the COVID thing, because I do think it's a genuine criticism that, hey, they did not have their team ready. You know, the staff did not have the team ready to play and everybody else's staff did. So, you know, what gives there? But it's not a problem that would repeat itself, right? You're not, you don't have to be ready to do another season with no preseason. So it doesn't really matter that that is a criticism. I think it's okay to be frustrated by it. But if you're talking about like their ability to coach future games, it's not really going to be a thing that comes up again. So I don't think that Zimmer should be on the hot seat, but I don't think it would be realistic to deny that he's on the hot seat for this game. And I kind of think this is one that Zimmer needs. And if he, again, 1-5 headed into the bye in a pretty lost season with a whole bunch of young players, many of whom, you know, the development is going out the window, like Drew Samia and stuff. I think that Wills might think about it, but I hope we don't have to talk about that. I hope we come back to on Monday and we're talking about a win. And with that, and hopefully, you know, let's all cross our fingers and hope that we're talking about a win, you know, when you're 2-4 and suddenly you've got like a much more friendly schedule coming in the rest of October, November and stuff. And hopefully, you know, we can start to turn this ship around, as it were. But that is going to do it for this week of Locked On Vikings. Of course, this episode was brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watchers. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available wherever you find your favorite podcasts, or you can always ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all next week. And as always, Skull.